It's possible, I think, to get into an incredible amount of explanation here. I mean, it's funny, the wordless often generates so many words. I think it's very important to dwell on the contrast, the paradox. It's definitely a paradox that's being evoked. And I think it'd be good if you can, on this retreat, perhaps at the end, say, of the Metta Bhavana, or when your mind is particularly concentrated and calm and warm, you know, very important that you're in that sort of state, to bring into mind beings. You can just listen to, you know, the bird song. That's beings making that bird song, or the cars going past, or, you know, a sense of the other people in the room. Get all that clearly into view, especially in metta, and then just drop into your mind, there are no beings. There are no beings. There are no beings. I'm developing metta for beings, but there are no beings. Just see what that does. At the end, in that silent, friendly space, reflect, although all beings have been led to nirvana, no beings have been led. And just see what goes on. I mean, just see what goes on. I've been reflecting in this way myself these last days, just bringing all this to mind, and just say a little bit about some of the things that sort of came out of it. You'll find your own way into it. But at the end of my practice, after I'd developed metta, done my devotional sadhana, visualization of the Buddha, and so on, I just let my awareness turn out to be aware, if you like, of beings, and particularly of the bird song in the garden, and you know, whatever noises were kind of going on in the house, but also aware of the people in my life, people in my mind, if you like, the people that I kind of carry around in my consciousness, and of course there's me as well. Just aware of the life around me. And one of the things that occurred to me as I just dropped in, there are no beings, was the sense of, well, there are no beings in the sense that I can't really separate myself from all this. Even if I went up a hut into a mountain, even if I went into a sealed room, there would still be beings, not separate from me. There'd be a sense of connection, of interconnection. And I also became aware that my awareness was constantly sort of trembling in relation to others, very sensitive to the effect of others, but that always in awareness there seemed to be others, always sort of responsive in some way, not necessarily for the good, but always there, always present. So in that sense there are no beings. I don't think what the Buddha's getting at here is to wipe out beings. But there are no beings in the sense of something separate. We're relational, interconnected. In that sense, there's no one to lead, and there's no one doing the leading. In another place, in a similar verse to this in the Diamond Sutra, it says, a bodhisattva is not one of the dharmas. A bodhisattva is not an item, is not a separate item. The term bodhisattva is just a name. So there's no one leading. There are no beings to lead. If there's no one to lead, no one doing the leading, you're not going anywhere. There's no nirvana to go to. And it's interesting, in the Mahayana, they began to speak not so much in terms of nirvana with remainder and without remainder. They speak of a pratisthita nirvana, which can be translated as something like the non-abiding nirvana, the nirvana that isn't located, that's not located in nirvana or in samsara, the non-locational nirvana. So what kind of a nirvana would that be? Could that be? Not a place, not a possession, not a state, the non-localized, the non-supported nirvana. And here, I think, you know, when we start to have these kinds of concepts, we have to start moving into poetry rather than concept. And this is where, you know, the visions that you find in Mahayana Sutras, that the whole of existence is a crisscrossing of beams of different coloured light, that all beings are like beams of light crossing and crisscrossing and interconnecting, or the golden cords that form a kind of checkerboard in Pure Land. So I think this is where we're going when we start talking about the non-locatable nirvana. A bodhisattva is not egotistically thinking that he leads, that he saves people. He's not going along with a great burden, a great load. He's one who's woken up to interconnectedness. He's woken up to the fact that there are no beings, that you can't separate it all out. Instead, there's a trembling, a tender, loving awareness, highly attuned, highly sensitive, not leading others to nirvana, but creatively interacting with others, and out of that something emerging and unfolding, a non-abiding nirvana, a Buddha field, perhaps. Perhaps the root point here is this: spiritual life, enlightenment, bodhi, nirvana, the attainment of those things, cannot be a solitary affair. You can't do it alone and then turn round and lead others. In reality, there are no beings. There's no separating into self and other. In reality, there is no division. We need to wake up to this. All Buddhist practice is concerned with waking up to this. It's why metta is so important, why empathy is so important. These express the way things are. Metta, kindness, is the expression of the way things are. So if we begin to become kinder, more sensitive and more helpful to those around us, we're at the beginnings of wisdom.